Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. I'm extra chippy today. It's before a long weekend, a couple of days off coming, so I'm excited. So today we are going to talk a lot about transfers, of course. We're going to talk about Napoli at the top, go over some hot transfer topics. We have a section of the podcast just for patrons, and I'm beyond excited for you to hear. This will be available to all, my interview with Alex Frosio from Gazzetta dello Sport, one of my favorite guests. We took a deep dive on the coaching situations in Serie A, and I think you'll really enjoy, especially the part on Sarri and Pirlo. Really, really great stuff with Alex. It was great to have him back. But we also have another great Alex on the podcast, of course, our co-host, producer of the show, Alex Goldberg, who declared war on Leeds last episode. Was fantastic. So let's say a little, Alex, I want to ask you this. So there's been a lot of talk on Koulibaly potentially leaving, and I'll go over all the details of what's going on with him. But I have to say, what's really kind of a very unlike Napoli move, I would say, that one of the players that they're heavily linked as a potential replacement for Koulibaly, and I put that in air quotes, for a variety of reasons, is Arsenal's Socrates Papastathopoulos. I'm probably really butchering his name, but I have to ask you, Alex, on paper, to me, this sounds like as big a drop-off as I've seen going from someone like Koulibaly to Socrates. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, it is. It is. Now, before I even get into, like, trying to make it better for Napoli fans, it is, obviously. I mean, we're talking about, even if we want to do a stupid comparison like FIFA, right? They're not closely rated. And by the way, if, like, Socrates was playing for an even worse team, I feel like his rating would be even worse. I don't know what it is, but it's probably only boosted by the team he's on. But now that I said that, and I totally am saying, yes, this is unfortunately a big downgrade when we're talking about just quality of a center back. Maybe Socrates has like a Chris Smalling effect at Napoli that Smalling did at Roma. Like, all right, I'm not Koulibaly. And I'm not saying Smalling was necessarily replacing a Koulibaly, but a defender in Socrates who's got experience. Like, you can't say he doesn't have experience. He's got good experience, and he's not a horrible player. And maybe Napoli is more or less like a comfortable situation for him. Maybe it's more or less his level, meaning like he can be a good center back on a Napoli team. And David, this is a little off topic, but De Laurentiis' comments told me that he doesn't view Napoli as a top tier club. His comments of, oh, you know, if we get a good offer for anybody, we'll sell them. Like, they're a good club, but that shows me they're not the destination. And maybe that's not breaking news, but I'm just saying, like, maybe that's Socrates' level. And maybe actually Socrates can fit well at Napoli and still be a good player for them and be solid and sturdy, kind of like Smalling had been for Roma. But yeah, if you're going to compare him to Koulibaly, well, you're going to be really upset and disappointed because he's just not Koulibaly. And listen, we joke about even Arsenal on this podcast. Arsenal are just widely, widely joked about. But Socrates on Arsenal, that just fits. Like, that just fits. Like, there's so many defenders. David, you and I both want so badly for Rugani to play for Arsenal because it would just be the perfect marriage. But yeah, I think Socrates is really, he is what he is. He probably belongs on a team like Arsenal, but I think at Napoli, he could find a solid, decent level. But David, your question was how much of a drop-off would it be for Napoli to go from Koulibaly to Socrates? A big one. A big one. So that's my answer. It's a big one. Now, let me say, I tried to give a little silver lining, but that's my own weird silver lining, just comparing it to Chris Smalling. But let me ask you, David, in your opinion, is there a silver lining for Napoli with this potential move?
Yeah, so before we get to the Koulibaly situation, let's kind of go over the silver lining. I totally agree with your analysis. The silver lining is really this, and one of our patrons, Kevin, hit the nail on the head. I'm glad he identified this because I think this is the biggest silver lining. You can make a case Koulibaly's replacement is really Manolas, who they signed last summer. Felt like a luxury signing for Napoli. They also already brought in Romani from Verona, who I think is a, I don't know, from what I've seen of Socrates, he's probably at least on that level, maybe slightly better, but he is coming from a three center back defense. And I thought Maksimovic did really well last season. So you could say if Koulibaly goes and Socrates comes in, that Manolas, Maksimovic are probably the starters, Romani and Socrates are the backup. So I think right there, that sounds already a little bit better. The other thing is, I think Napoli, and we've talked about it in the past, they're in very solid financial situation. I saw Swiss Ramble also mentioned that them and Bayern are among the only top teams that have no debt whatsoever. Our friend Napoli Outsider has provided plenty of context on Napoli's finances. So they're in good shape. And, you know, they kind of already have Koulibaly's replacement on the squad. Socrates wouldn't be very expensive to bring in. The wages, yes, but not the transfer fee. And that leaves a lot of money for Napoli to kind of invest in other areas. And the two players they're heavily linked to are Boga and Veretout. Veretout would help replace Allan. And again, also Allan, in my opinion, they've kind of already replaced because they brought in Demme and Lobotka in January. This is kind of how Napoli rolls. A lot of people felt like Lozano was brought in, maybe not as Callejon's replacement, but as insurance if Mertens didn't sign an extension, if Insigne left. So Napoli is always very proactive replacing players ahead of time. So I think this guy isn't falling if this drop-off happens, but I totally could see how on paper this looks really bad. And let's be honest, you lose Koulibaly, that's really a big loss for Napoli. But the situation on that one isn't really for sure that he's going to leave, because Napoli and Man City aren't talking to each other. It's all through Koulibaly's agent who's brokering the deal. If people might remember, there was an issue between Napoli and Man City dating back to the Jorginho deal when it seemed he was heading to Man City and then it ended up going to Chelsea. So if the Koulibaly deals happen and Socrates comes in, yeah, I definitely agree on paper. Huge, huge drop off. But if you add just Boga, to me, that's really big. If you can get Roma to sell Veretout, I think is a good player and I think can at least replace the way Allan was playing in the past year after his move to PSG botched. I think he can replace that. And then Napoli squad, you know, not as good defensively without Koulibaly, but really, really intriguing up front. There's also a lot of buzz on Lozano having a comeback season. So I think there is a silver lining there. All right, so now let's get to some more hot transfer topics. A lot has happened in the past few days. Which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's jump into it. How concerned should Milan fans be that there isn't a formal option to buy for Brahim Diaz?
So this was interesting, and we saw this a lot last summer, too, because long and short of it, Milan and Real Madrid were in talks for a long time. They were haggling over buyback and counter buyback option, but they really wanted to bring Brahim Diaz to Milan's retreat. I think, you know, the timing of the season starting so soon and clubs having a lot of urgency to bring the players in, I think Milan was like, you know what, let's just bring him here on loan and then we'll figure it out after. Milan and Real Madrid have a great relationship. So let's see if they work it out. I would tell Milan fans, to me, the most important thing is that Milan gets back to the Champions League. Any player that helps that should be welcomed with open arms. And I get it. You'd rather have the player on a permanent basis. But look at it this way. If Real Madrid brings back Brahim Diaz, it means he's had a really, really good season, because we know the caliber of players Real Madrid has on their squad, and they have to decide what is he more advantageous of, as someone that brings us in revenue or someone that helps our team. So if they decide to bring him back, it means he had a great season for Milan, and I'm assuming he probably helped them get back to the Champions League. So I would really look at it in those terms. I wouldn't worry so much about being a feeder club. Juve would do that Morata deal again and again and again because Morata was great in the Champions League for them, brought him a ton of revenues with his goals. And ultimately, that's what mattered. That's what brought him Higuain, which eventually turned into Ronaldo with that huge salary slot. So I think Milan fans, I would really have the mentality of the most important thing for us is to get back to the Champions League, get that revenue. Kind of look at it a little bit like Rafinha, those types of deals that Inter did that kind of helped them get back to that level. So that's really what I would focus on.
Okay. All right, David, how about this? What can Everton fans expect from Alan?
I have to be honest, I'm surprised that Ancelotti, after he had a mutiny at Napoli, and Alan was someone who, you know, didn't hide the fact he wasn't too happy that his move to PSG collapsed. And De Laurentiis has talked about it recently, saying maybe in retrospect, they should have sold him to PSG back in January of last year. But they never made the offer that he wanted. And now he ends up selling him instead of for 40, 45 million, which PSG would have gone to, ends up selling him for 25. On the bright side, they've amortized so much of Alan, probably all of it, that it's all profit, but they still would have made more. So I'm a little bit surprised that Ancelotti and Alan are reuniting, but good. Look, is Alan the same player he was 2 years ago? Maybe not. There are some people that think he's one of those players that really benefited from Sarri. I'm not sure I agree because Alan was really, really great at Udinese. When I think of the best box-to-box midfielders in Serie A the past 8-10 years, I think Vidal definitely number one, and Alan would probably be second. But he just, you know, wasn't as good ever since the move to PSG collapsed. Now, is it all a matter of motivation? Goes to a new league and he comes back to being the player that he was? Possible. No, it's certainly possible. He's also a Brazilian player in his late 20s. Sometimes the track record with that isn't great. But at that price, I think he's a solid addition. Are you a little bit concerned? Everton's making a lot of noise on the transfer market, Alex. I know nowhere near like Chelsea. I always say Chelsea are in a different window than anyone else. But you're a little bit intrigued from what you're seeing at Everton, Alex?
I am, but I saw a tweet the other day that this just feels like another Everton window where they buy a bunch of good players. We predict them for maybe a sneaky 4th, 5th, or 6th, and they end up 12th. I'm just going off of what we've seen.
Possible.
In history. Yeah, these are good players. I'm not saying they're not good players, but I don't know. Like, are these players going to be with each other for a long time? Are Everton going to have the stability to have a team together for a long time? It's not going to gel right away. I don't even think Chelsea will gel right away with all these new players. So, I don't know. Yeah, they're getting a good player in Alan, but I don't think it necessarily means Everton are going to be a very good team. That's my opinion. Yeah. So, all right. Well, we have another link to the Premier League here, David, in this next hot transfer topic. What did you make of Atalanta selling Castagne to Leicester and signing Karsdorp?
Well, this is, to me, is the typical Atalanta move. So they sell Castagne for 23 million euro. And they bring in Karsdorp for around 7. So they do great financially. And look, Karsdorp at Roma definitely didn't work out. But, you know, in Italy, they say la fortuna aiuta gli audaci. God helps those that help themselves is the loose translation. And look, Atalanta just seems to luck out in these moves when they make these types of moves. Sell a player for more, replace him for a third of the price, and then it magically works out. Karsdorp at least knows Serie A a little bit, so I'm intrigued by this move. Interestingly, Atalanta was also linked to Florenzi, and then they end up going with Karsdorp, both owned by Roma. So I'm intrigued by this move. And I think for Leicester, too, this is a very nice move. I think calling Castagne, a sub at Atalanta is way too dismissive. It would be like calling Muriel a sub. Those guys were essentially co-starters. Castagne has good speed, can play on both sides, has international experience, played in the Champions League now. There's been some concerns of players going from Serie A to the Premier League, and then add to that concerns about players leaving Atalanta and not working out once they leave Gasperini's system. And it's possible. And look, Castagne right now, we've seen him mainly as a wing back and a 3-center back defense. But I'm cautiously optimistic that he'll work out. So I think nice move for Leicester. I have a feeling Karsdorp is going to kind of work out for Atalanta. And keep in mind, right now, they still have Hodebor and Gussen still on the team, although Hodebor said his cycle at Atalanta is over. But Karsdorp's a really nice insurance policy. I like what they did here. Mm.
All right, David. So I got asked then, the follow-up for this would be, what do you make of Atalanta's transfer window overall?
So here's the thing, and you guys know that when I look at transfers and teams, what I always ask myself is, are the players that you're bringing in good enough to have a significant role on the teams you're catching up? For me, improving your squad, yeah, that's great. But what really moves the needle is if you bring in players that can start for the teams you're catching up to. And look, Atalanta's already punching above their weight big time, being a Champions League team 2 years in a row. But if they want to stay here, they're going to have to get quality players, you know, maybe not Juve and Inter, but definitely players that can play for Roma, Lazio, Milan. Those are the team, to me, they are, Napoli. Those are the team they are competing with. So fair or unfair, I'm judging Atalanta's moves based on, can they play legitimately for these teams? So let's look at what they've done so far. A, I think it's absolutely great that it sounds like they're going to keep all their stars. Maybe Gerson leaves. Maybe Hadebor leaves. If you had to cash in on someone, Castagne's not bad. Because, again, important player, but not a definitive starter. They've brought in Miranchuk, who a pretty intriguing player. We saw him in the Champions League against Juve. And he's an insurance policy on Ilicic. I think up front, they look fantastic. Yeah, Papu Gomez is going to be a year older. Ilicic coming back from his personal issue. It sounds like Zapata is staying up front. They're in great shape. They have Muriel, now Miranchuk. You got to love that. They bring in Medeiro, a wingback prospect from Barca's youth team. Could be intriguing. At center back, which, you know, is definitely the weakness on the team, the player they're bringing in is Romero, who Juve owns and was at Genoa. And look, you're seeing a lot of deals between Juve and Atalanta. Not surprising. I always tell people, when you see clubs doing a lot of deals, don't look at every deal individually. Look at the sum of them. We know Juve paid Atalanta big money for Kulusevski. I would say worth that money, and probably would have sold for more based on how he played in the pandemic, post-pandemic calcio. Juve got him at the right time in January before he completely exploded. That Atalanta bought prospect Muratore from Juve, and now they're about to get Romero on loan with option to buy. Now, I think Romero is an above average starting center back in Serie A. I would say just above average. You know, there's below average, average, above average, that there's good, very good, and elite. To me, he's in that range of above average. Could Romero start at Milan, Napoli? Not so sure. Now, we know Gattuso wanted Romero, so maybe he thinks he could. Lazio, yeah, I think he could. Definitely not Juve and Inter. So to me, Romero, nice move, but not one that moves the needle. And when I look at Atalanta squad, the one area where you can definitely move the needle and improve the squad is center back, and I'm just not sure Romero fits that. Now, he's fairly young. He does kind of fit the mold of the Gasperini-type center back. He knows the three center back defense. And again, I know I'm probably holding Atalanta to an unfair standard, but in my opinion, doesn't totally move the needle. And if they really, really wanted to make a jump even to the next level or consolidate where they are, this is the one area where they could have done it. Mm.
All right, David, last hot transfer topic. Where do you see Bonaventura going?
Yeah, so his contract with Milan expired. He had that emotional moment at San Siro for his last game, but he's not part of Milan's plans. I know there's a lot of affection from Milan fans for Bonaventura for good reason, but, you know, I think Milan did the right thing moving on. They need to go with younger players. So he was at first linked to Verona and Benevento, so definitely a big drop-off there. There was some buzz on Lazio, but never really confirmed, and now Fiorentina seem to be in the driver's seat. They've met with Raiola, who represents Bonaventura. They look like a pretty good landing spot for him. I think Buenaventura could fit pretty well. But, you know, Fiorentina has a nice midfield as is. I guess he could also play as a winger. So I think that's a nice landing spot for him. So as we're recording now, I would say Fiorentina. Okay, so now let's get to the patron part of the podcast. If you enjoy Calcioland, I definitely recommend becoming a patron. We have a lot of great benefits. A, you get longer versions of our podcast. Tuesday's episode was basically another podcast, just the patron section. Today, we have a decent amount of stuff as well. So if you enjoy pods, we have that. We almost always do a bonus interview every week. For that's a one tier, and then we have another tier where you get all that as well as weekly articles, including my transfer rumor raider, and you get all your questions answered. In addition to that, you'd be supporting a great cause. I personally don't make any money off Patreon. It's to cover production costs, pay our freelance writers, and making a monthly donation to the Insuperabili, an absolutely amazing nonprofit in Italy. They run Calcio Academies for kids with disabilities. They are starting off again shortly. I'm very excited to support them. We made a donation of €250 this week. I'm very proud of that, and I want to thank our patrons. So you'd be getting a lot more Calcio content and doing something good. So it's been way too long since we had my good friend Alex Frosio on the podcast. For those that not that familiar with Alex, he's been one of my favorite guests. He's a great writer on Gazzetta dello Sport, which is my Bible. I read it every day. Alex often does game reports. He does the pagelle. He's an astute observer of Calcio. I know especially the under 21. He does a lot with that. And he is the son of a very famous coach in Italy, so we always love talking coaching with Alex. So, Alex, it's always a pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Ciao, David. Hi, everybody. I'm glad to be here again. It's been too long, you know. You were right.
Yeah, absolutely. But we have a lot to catch up to. So, Alex, as I mentioned, you know a lot about coaching. I love reading your tweets about it. And I would say Alex is one of the few people I know that loves Sarri more than I do. So let's start here. So obviously, Sarri just lasted 1 year at Juve. So, A, what did you make of his year at Juve? And do you think the club did the right thing by deciding to move on from him?
First, I would say that, yes, I expected something more from Sarri. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the results, because we know that they wanted to win the Champions League, but there is no coach in the world guaranteeing you that you can win the Champions League. We see what happened with Guardiola, with Tuchel, with all the people. But I expected more because I didn't see what I expected from Sarri. We are talking about Sarri Ball. We are talking about Sarri Ball, obviously. We should also consider what Sarri Ball is, because many people expected to see Juventus playing like Napoli, for example. We all remember what Napoli did. Charging the left side to go on the right side with Callejon. But that's something that only Callejon can do. So I didn't expect that, because I knew that, because Sarri said that he leaves freedom to his attacking players to decide what to do. He gives them principles. But then they are free to choose. That's what happened at Chelsea, for example, where Hazard did what he wanted, Willian did what he wanted, Pedro did what he wanted. So all these players are free. I expected something more, talking about defense, pressing, recovering the ball in the opposite half. They did it, but they did not as much as I expected. And I'm afraid that this is because not all the players were, I can say, devoted to him.
Yeah.
Because I think about Pjanic. Pjanic played the first 2 months like Sarri wanted.
Yeah.
In the famous 150
touches, yeah.
passes every time. Then he started to play as he did before. It's like I had the impression that the players played as they were used to, and not how Sarri wanted.
Yeah, no, I think that's very, very fair. Yeah, and I think that's a very good description. So I want to ask you about the decision to ask Pirlo, and why I'm very interested in your opinion is, again, you have passion for coaching. Your dad did the more typical career doing the gavetta, working his way up. And we have Pirlo, who all of a sudden, 8 days after being appointed the under-23 coach, yeah, becomes the senior team coach with no experience whatsoever. He has yet to even complete his thesis at Coverciano. So what do you make about this decision to hand the keys to Pirlo of the senior team?
Well, let me say that I could say that I don't have an opinion because we don't know him.
Yeah.
We don't know how he trains the team. Which ideas he has about football. I heard him say, yes, we want to press high, we want to recover the ball, we want to play an attacking football. Yeah, okay, how do you mean to do that? Because everybody, if I go to coach children or boys or kids, and I say, okay, let's play this way, I must be able to teach them how to play that way. That's the difficult part.
Yeah.
So I say I don't have an opinion because we don't know him. He was appointed as a Juventus coach without one single day with the team, with the whatever team. We don't know.
Yeah.
Yes, he was a great player. Maybe one of the best players Italy ever had. But coaching is a complete different thing because you have to think with 20, 25 minds, your
yeah.
players' minds. So, okay, maybe he will be the best coach in the world. I remember I had a similar ideas when Mancini was appointed at Fiorentina. We're talking about 2000, 2001. More or
less. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember that I was against this decision because he didn't have the experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today we know that Mancini is a very good coach. He won a lot. But at the beginning, I think it's unfair. It's also unfair towards all those coaches that worked in difficult times, difficult
yeah.
teams. That's what I mean with experience. You learn how to work in certain situations. It's a part of the job. I think it's fair to have experience because that's what I don't like about what happened to Sarri. Now we're talking about Pirlo. What a coach he will be. Not Sarri. Sarri was not good. We are talking about Sarri that works in football for 30 years.
Yeah.
At any level. Let's not forget that he quit his job at the bank to work on football, and he couldn't know that he would have been one of the best coaches in the world.
Yeah.
He just started for the passion for football. So he worked for 30 years. Now Pirlo arrives. Okay, he was the best playmaker ever. But why he should be a good coach? We don't know. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, I loved your answer. Go ahead.
And mostly we can't say Pirlo is so good, Sarri was so bad. I don't like it. I don't like this simplification.
I love it. I love your answer. We ride for Sarri, so I love it. And yeah, I think it's a very fair thing. We just don't know with Pirlo, and I think that's really the best way to put it. One manager we know plenty about, maybe we know too much about him, some would say, with his complaining, is Antonio Conte. So he finishes the first season with as many points as the treble season, 1 point behind Juve, makes it to the Europa League final. How do you rate Conte's first season at Inter?
Very high. Very high because I saw a team.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not talking about results because 1 point from Juventus is not the real difference because in the last month, Juventus maybe didn't play at all. But I'm talking about what we saw. We saw a team, we saw players playing together.
Yeah.
We saw a solid idea of football. That is the great value and the great limit of Antonio Conte. Because mm-hmm. He has this strong idea of football, but sometimes it's the only idea he has. And sometimes you need something else. I think about the Europa League final. When they went 2-3 down, he didn't understand that the team didn't understand that they had to play a different football. They could not go straight ahead with verticality. They need to play more, to pass more, try to find spaces. But Inter is not built. It's not built to make that. It's built in just one way,
and yep.
It worked because in Italy it worked, in Europe it worked. I can also say that they went to the Europa League final just because they played once the Serie A was over.
Yep, totally
agree. If they had to play in the middle of the week, I'm afraid that they didn't go so far.
Yeah.
But I can say that that Inter has a strong idea of football. Maybe not always it worked because not always all the players were available.
Yeah.
In fact, Conte is looking for players that can give him more experience, players that he knows that he can rely on. Because if you get Vidal or you get Kolarov, you know what they give you all the time. That's the big difference, in my opinion, from big teams and teams that are so and so. You have players that you know always what they can give you, and that's not what. Let's think about Bayern Munich. That's the perfect example. That's the perfect example. You always know because you have 11 players or 15 players, you know that for 50 games a year, they give you high standard. Okay? You can't say that with, I don't know, let's say Candreva or Borja Valero or Di Mattoni that I love, but he's still young. So sometimes he plays good, sometimes he makes mistakes. So if you have players you can rely on, it's better.
Absolutely. Very well said. You know that the Europa League run for Inter reminded me a little bit about Italy at the Euro with Conte. It kind of gave me a lot of vibes of that, right? Okay, let's go to the other side of your city, Milano, and we have Pioli. So what did you make of the decision to stick with Pioli over going with the Ragnic revolution at Milan? Do you think that was the right decision based on what Milan did in the post-pandemic culture?
I'm afraid not. Not because I don't rate Pioli. I think he's a very good manager. I appreciated him when he was at Lazio and at Inter. He came to La Gazzetta to explain his idea of football. And I found him very a very good coach. I studied him during the lockdown because he made a video lesson to the coaches in Italy, and he's very prepared. I really like him, but say that if you take a decision for a revolution as Milan wanted to do with Ragnik, you can't go back just because he played 2 months in which conditions, very strange conditions, because we played without fans. We played every 3 days. It was not, I don't want to say it was not proper football, because it was proper football, but there were not proper conditions. And I want to see what will happen when all the teams will be at their best, when you will have fans back, because I know, because I saw the data, that many players the don't give so much with the fans and without the fans.
Yeah.
They feel the pressure.
Yeah.
They feel the pressure. So if you want to, if your idea was to, was for a revolution, and the revolution is not only the way you play football, it's the play you, is the way you run the football club.
Absolutely. And
you knew,
yeah.
And you knew that with Ragnik, you had an idea of how to run a football club. That is probably what Elliot is thinking about Milan. Not a farmer club, but a club that needs to grow, needs to grow players, then maybe sell them. And I think that that Ragnik has that kind of idea. We had an interview with him on La Gazzetta.
Yeah, and, which was excellent.
His idea of football was very clear.
Yeah. And I look
and,
at
also I would have I would have liked to see if his idea could work in Italy, because in Italy it's very different from Germany, for example. But you know, we will not see him.
Yeah, no, I would have been interested too, especially for the historic moment that Milan is in. So let's talk about the former coach at Milan, Gattuso. I know, you know, you've often said that, you know, Gattuso has to kind of do catenaccio, but it can work because that philosophy, he seems to really embody it. But let me ask you, in general, has Gattuso convinced you as a manager? Do you think, you know, maybe not ever reach Conte's level, but do you think he can be a very good manager for his career?
Yes, I think he can be a good manager, not a top manager, in my opinion, because, again, I heard him talk. I know he's very prepared, but also, I don't know. I'm afraid he lacks something. I also wonder, did he do a good job at Napoli this year? Everybody says yes. Where did Napoli arrive this year? Was sixth, seventh?
Yeah, seventh. Yeah.
And we are talking about a team that, in my opinion, was second or third. For the quality of the team, of the roster,
for sure.
Because so we have to consider the value of his roster and the results he got.
Absolutely.
So I still think that he's a more defensive coach, and that his teams work better when he can play defensively and then counter attack. Because it's very, very, very difficult to play in the opposite side when the other team is defending with 11 players, and he has to be very, very good. And I think he's not so good. So for good, I'm talking about some people like Guardiola, like maybe Conte, the best Sarri, this kind of. Of coaches,
absolutely.
So he can be a good manager. Good manager, not a top manager.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. So now let's talk about Fonseca. Last time I chatted with you, I loved this thing that you said, that you know he started playing, you know, attacking from the back, this exciting style, and then Italy really changed them a little bit. So tell me, you know, I thought Roma was quite good in the post-pandemic football. So tell me a little bit your assessment of Fonseca, and how much has Italy truly changed his style?
I think he's a very intelligent and smart coach. So So he understood that he couldn't play the way he used to. Because there is something that I think that only in Italy happens when you play a game. Almost all the teams, when they lose the ball, they run back to the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Immediately, all the 11 players. So if you're used to play a kind of football that attracts pressure and then goes to the other half, you have to change because you don't have the space at the back of the defense. That's what, if you're intelligent, if you're smart, you understand that. That's what Fonseca did, I think.
Yeah.
He changed his style of play. But again, we have to make a difference between the system 4-3-3, 3-5-2, and the principles. Fonseca changed his system, but didn't change his principles. And he knows many principles, so he can play in different ways. And he learned to play in a different way in Italy because he needed to. But
yeah,
as we said, with Gattuso, I'm afraid that his results were not as high as his roster was expected to.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Because,
I think at worst, yeah, they
because,
had the fifth.
Because if we, I think that Inter has a worse roster, Atalanta for sure.
Yeah. Lazio probably.
Milan as well.
Too.
Lazio for sure. Because they don't have so many players, they didn't spend so much. So if we see the results, they're not so good.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So now let's talk about a manager we both really like, De Zerbi. I remember when I met you in person at Gazzetta, I told you Sassuolo would finish ahead of Fiorentina. They barely did, but they did. But let me ask you, De Zerbi is staying at Sassuolo, which I think is great for at least one more year. But if you had to pick the ideal club for him to go to next, which club would that be?
I would say Milan.
Mm.
Because I had this romantic idea of Arrigo Sacchi.
Yeah, I know you love Sacchi, yeah?
Yeah. It was a bet. Let's not forget that Sacchi at Milan was a bet because he came from Parma, he came from Serie B, he came from the first month or first 40 days at Milan that was tremendous because he lost with Fiorentina at home, he lost in the Coppa, in the UEFA Cup with Espanyol, so he survived a very difficult period at the beginning. So it was a bet. And I would like to see again a coach that take risks, that tries to bring a different kind of football at Milan as Sacchi did 30 years ago.
I like it.
I don't know if he could do that, if De Zerbi could do that, because we all know that training at Sassuolo, or we could say Sassuolo Udinese, anyway, a small club that has not much pressure. It's not easy, but it's not so difficult. When you go to a big club where there is expectations, you have to win, you have to play good football. It's not easy. You need a very strong personality that De Zerbi has, but you also need to be lucky, because if something goes wrong, you are the one that goes.
Yeah,
but I would like to see him. I would like to see him at Milan.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout. Absolutely. Okay, last question, and these are two players that I think are really, really interesting, and I know you've covered them because I know you're very Yander 21 is a team you really pay close attention to. So we have Tonali, who is about to join Milan, and we have Locatelli, who now is linked to Juve, and you know, they're both two very interesting midfielders, pretty different. So obviously I know their roles different,
yeah.
But if you had to bet who's going to be a better player 5 years from now? And again, knowing they play different positions between Tonali and Locatelli, who would you bet on?
Let me say, first of all, that they are perfect to play together.
Yeah.
Just like Pirlo and Gattuso.
And Gattuso, were. Yeah.
Yeah. And in this new era of football, they are not like Pirlo and Gattuso because they are different, but with two midfielders at center, let's say in 4-2-3-1, they're perfect. Perfect. And to answer your question, I think that Locatelli can be a better player because he has everything. Everything. He has a good touch. He's a classy player. He has vision. He knows the rhythm of the match, so he can decide the rhythm of the football that the team is playing. And he's also more experienced because I rate Tonali very much, but he played just 1 year in Serie A, and he played in a team that didn't go so well. Instead, Locatelli is more experienced also because he learned difficult times. I spoke to him right 1 year ago. We were in Armenia. We were going to Armenia for the under 21. And he said that he suffered the period after the famous goal against Juventus when he played for Milan, because everyone was expecting from him things that he was not able to do every single match. And so he suffered for that. He learned, he went to Sassuolo, he was not in the starting 11 at Sassuolo, let's not forget, but he worked. He learned how to improve, and he improved. And now he can play, again, I repeat myself, but he can play with one touch, he can play two touches, he can go with the ball, he can shoot, he can do a lot of things. I don't want to say he's like Pirlo, but like Pirlo, he could play like a trequartista, but being a playmaker. So, I like him very, very much. I think that Tonali is a more physical player. We all know that he was considered similar to Pirlo, but mostly for his hair, not for the style of his play. He considered himself more similar to Gattuso.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what he says. And that's why I say the same.
Absolutely. Well, Alex, I can't thank you enough. It was really, really great to catch up with you. As always, great, great insight on coaching, players, everything. I always tell people, if you're learning Italian, you want to get into calcio, we have listeners in Italy. I'm sure many are very familiar with Alex. I love his tweets, love his work on Gazzetta dello Sport. And I look forward to chatting with you again, my friend, during the season. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, David. Grazie.